Tonight we have the opportunity to experience God's power. That's the title of my talk. It's all about God's power here tonight and how God's power helps us to overcome the world. Tonight I'd like to begin with some scripture from Exodus. And this scripture is a scripture where Moses is getting ready to get the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. And I want you to listen to the scripture that I'm going to read. It says, "On the morning of the third day, there were peals of thunder and lightning and a heavy cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. But Moses led the people out of the camp to meet God. And they stationed themselves at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke, for the Lord came down upon it in fire. The smoke rose from it, although as from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. The trumpet blast grew louder and louder while Moses was speaking, and God answering him with thunder. When the Lord came down to the top of Mount Sinai, he summoned Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up to him." So you see, the analogy is this is where we are. All weekend, we have been climbing this spiritual mountain. Whether you know it or not, through the witness talks, the small groups, the fun and games, Disney Dancing with the Stars, all of these things have been preparing us for this moment right now. And I know that God is ready to move powerfully in this room here tonight. As I said, we have the opportunity to experience him in a sacramental way here this evening. Christ is close to us in the sacraments. His power is close to us in the sacraments. But before we get the chance to experience that, I would like to take some time and talk to you about how I have experienced God's power working in my life. My story begins before I can remember that it begins. I was 3 weeks old, and I was taken to the physician's office for a checkup, a routine physical. And while I was in the doctor's office, the doctor heard a heart murmur. And they said that I needed to be checked by a cardiologist. So my mom takes me to the cardiologist, and they run all these different tests. And after that, they found out that I would need to have 2 open heart surgeries in the first year of my life. As you can imagine, for my parents, this was pretty tough. You know, when I think about this, I think my parents were about the same age I am now. And for them to be able to handle that, I can't imagine. I can't even imagine what that was like for them spiritually, emotionally, physically. I just can't. But my parents knew something very important. Most of your parents know this, too. That before operation number one, at 3 weeks of age, my heart was the size of an adult chicken. Right? Have you seen the side of it? Adult chicken's heart is about that big, okay? They were to operate on that and fix that. And in 1985, when I was born, it was just coming out. The technology was just coming out to be able to really do successful operations. And so my parents knew this was risky, and they knew something that had to be done. They baptized me in the hospital chapel. I had an emergency baptism in the hospital. Right before the surgery began, the last thing that happened was I had an emergency baptism. They had no time to find godparents, So my godparents were my grandparents. And I was baptized, and then I had the surgeries. Now, why do I tell you this? In fact, every year I argue with Jesus about telling you this. And the reason is that I don't know why it's important, but he knows why it's important. He wants me to tell you this. He says, you have to tell these kids that you're claimed for Christ in the sacrament of baptism. You are claimed for Jesus Christ. And God, I came into your life at 3 weeks of age. Most of you were maybe baptized 6 months, 8 months, 10 months after you were born. I was baptized at 3 weeks of age. I can't tell you that my baptism is any more important than yours, because baptism does the exact same thing for everyone. It cleanses them of all original sin and any personal sin that they have. So the sacrament remains the same. But in a way, God came so early into my life, in a sacramental way, in a powerful way, through the sacrament of baptism. But my theme here, and probably throughout the night, is that just because God comes into your life, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything is going to turn out peachy, right? We can experience God here this weekend and powerfully, but it doesn't mean that when you walk out of these doors tomorrow afternoon, everything is going to be fine, because it doesn't work that way. So my first example of that is when I was in the first two surgeries. At some point along that, I had a lot of medical tests, a lot of invasive medical tests, and I ended up with a stroke that paralyzed the left half of my body. And so my body was paralyzed on the left side, and now that I tell you, you'll probably notice it a little more. I think I do a pretty good job of hiding it. I've worked many years to hide it. But you'll probably notice that I drive with a knob on my car, on the steering wheel. I type with one hand on a keyboard. I catch and throw a baseball with one hand. I even learned how to tie my shoes after some struggle. But there's a story that I want to tell you about overcoming struggle, because I've had to do it my whole life. The stroke throughout my childhood really challenged me many times to overcome physical and mental challenges that I was faced with. To stick with the water theme here, I'm not going to spray you again, I promise. I was in like 6th or 7th grade, and I still wasn't able to go off a diving board. Okay? I couldn't swim. I could, you know, swim a little bit in the shallow lanes, but I couldn't go off a diving board. And I really wanted to. My little brother, by the way, he's younger than me by a couple of years. He's 3 years younger than me. And he was on the Upper Mainline Y swimming team. So he was doing yards and yards and yards, jumping off the diving board, having fun with his friends. I really wanted to do that. And I couldn't. I didn't know how to swim. I wasn't confident. But one day I got the courage enough up to ask my dad if he would take me into the deep end of the pool and help me go off the diving board, if he would catch me. And I remember the look the lifeguard gave him when, wait a minute, you're going to take a 13-year-old on this diving board? You're going to catch your 13-year-old son? Like, are you serious? Like, the look was like almost belittling. Like, really? Your son is still don't know how to swim? And it didn't matter, though, because my dad jumped in the water, and he waited for me to get to the other end of the diving board. And I got there, and I stood there, and I looked at him with that look, you know, like that kids give their parents, like, you're going to catch me, right? Like, I need you there. Don't leave, you know? And so I'm there, and he's like, just jump already. Just jump. So I jump in the water, and he pulls me up. And he says, now swim, just like you swim in the shallow end, just swim to the side. So I swam to the side as he's like holding my belly, like, you know, and I did it. And I did it again and again and again and again. And you know what? He, every time, loosened his grip just a little bit more. And so finally he was standing on a towel on the side of the pool, as I waved to him going off the diving board. You know, when you're in eighth grade, you're sort of clueless, or seventh grade, you're sort of clueless to God in many ways, you know. And I didn't recognize that God was all over this story until later. But God is present all over that little example. When we are young, God instructs us. He teaches and catches us, right? We need a lot of instruction. We need a lot of mentoring. And we need to know that we have a safety net there. My dad was that for me. And God is that for us. God is that for us here on this weekend, but he's here for us as we become children of God. Now, I am in a family of swimmers. My little brother and my little sister are both Division I athletes, swimmers. My sister got a scholarship to swim for Villanova. A 50% scholarship to swim for Villanova this year. My little brother swam for Villanova too. Division I athletics, NCAA. And my little sister and little brother, when I was in high school, they were like in middle school, but they were on the swim team and they were in the pool every single day. And the conversations around the dinner table were all the time all about swimming. Swimming flooded our lives. I was at swim meets constantly. You know what? I never was in a swim meet. I never was able to really do it because of my stroke. I could recreationally swim. But I was, at the same time that they were passionate about swimming, I was passionate about getting my Eagle Scout badge. I am an Eagle Scout. I made it. But the thing about the Eagle Scout badge is that you have to complete the swimming requirement. And the swimming merit badge, or the swimming requirement for this, is not just your average jump in the diving board and swim to the side of the pool. You know, it's more of water safety. There are requirements like you have to swim 100 yards using two different strokes. And, you know, you tell that to your younger siblings, and they're like, well, yeah, just do this stroke and that stroke. I said, I've already had a stroke. I don't know how to do that stroke. You know? So, you know, they give you all this advice. And so I was trying to get this badge. And I was thinking about getting an alternative badge. I was thinking about there's a way like you can apply through disability in the Boy Scouts and do an alternative badge. And I was sick and tired of hearing the advice come from the four winds of the dinner table, my little brother, my little sister, my mom, and my dad, you know, giving me the lowdown on this whole thing. And I finally asked my mom, I'm like, look, if I'm going to do this, I need a coach, and I need one that is going to understand me. And it's really hard to find somebody who does swimming and disability at the same time, or physical therapy at the same time, basically. So I just waited until that point in time came up. And one day I was at the YMCA swimming recreationally with my friends, and my mom spotted Juliet working. Her name was Juliet. She was working with a disabled person in the pool. I mean, severely disabled person. And she was getting them to swim and sort of kick a little bit. They clearly were paraplegic and trying to overcome the paraplegic stuff with the kick and doing the water thing and the moving. She was moving their legs. And, you know, she was really, really awesome at doing all this. And so my mom, after she was finished, walked up to her and said, excuse me, my son, had a stroke and he needs to get a swimming badge. Would you consider counseling him to become, for his Eagle Scout badge? Would you consider helping him get this merit badge? She's like, oh my gosh, I'd be honored. I'd love that. So we got her certified to become a BSA swimming badge counselor. We made sure he paid for all that. We got her to come. And then we had to show up at the pool for this thing. And, you know, you don't have to do it all at once. You have to complete all these requirements, but you don't have to do it all at once. So we broke it down. And these requirements are, if you're a Boy Scout or an Eagle Scout, I don't know if they've changed, but you might know them. And, you know, one of them I said before was swimming 100 yards using two different strokes. Well, you know, the best I can do in the pool is like the freestyle thing, right? And Because as my sister would tell you, you know, you have to be able to go in the water like this, turn your hand like that on freestyle. I'm like, Mary, this hand doesn't do that, you know. Sorry. It just doesn't do that. You know, I was talking with her, and Juliet, and she said, well, Bill, there's other strokes, and we can figure out how to do a legal stroke and, you know, a legal, whatever it is, swimming association stroke with you. And so she kept working, and you know what? It was amazing what she did. You know, she would literally take me by the hand and show me where to put it and how to do the muscle memory stuff. I learned that that a side stroke was a legal stroke where I could just lay on one side and use my one hand and my one leg to go down the pool. I'm like, I'm allowed to do this? I didn't know I could do that. And she's like, yeah, you can. So she's teaching me how to swim slowly and surely. I get that 100 yards thing pretty quickly. But then I had to learn how to do a flip turn. You have to do a racing turn, what they call it. And watching me do a racing turn is really funny. Because you have to get squatted down, and this leg doesn't like to go, and it likes to pop up in water. I really can't float very well. So here I am trying to, like, crouch down. And you know what she finally did? She finally grabbed me by the swimsuit, and she just flipped me in the water. Just what she did. She said, this is how you do it. Whoom! And you know what? You know what? It works. Sometimes God has to grab you by the pants and just turn your entire life around. All right? And he does that for us. And she did that for me. And you know what? I learned how to do it by myself. And she said, all right, now I'm going to loosen my grip. Just like my dad. I'm going to loosen my grip. And you're going to slowly and surely get it. And you know what? I got it. And the last one is the best one. And I love the last requirement, it's my favorite requirement. I had to learn how to jump, because apparently tomorrow I'm going to take a ride on the Titanic or something. You know, you had to learn how to jump in the water with all your clothes on and take them all off, and then with your pants on, you know, and then blow up your pants into a life vest so that you could wear this life vest around your neck and then continually blow into the pant leg so that you would have something you could float with. Why I need this life skill, but if the Titanic sinks again tomorrow or the Carnival cruise ship goes down, I'm in good shape. All right? So, literally, we jump in the pool and with all my clothes on. And I wore smart clothes. Like, you know, you guys have those, like, real, like... Yeah, like smart, yeah. It's sort of like a smartphone, but like 1996 edition. All right? So I had these sweatpants, but they were real thin, like neoprene kind of things. And so I jumped in the pool with them. They blew up really easily. But it still took time because, you know, this side of my body doesn't work, so I'm trying really work as well as this one. So I'm trying to, like, get one leg out, this leg out. It's really funny to watch. I'm sure that all the people in the IMC are like, what is this kid doing? Why is he in the pool with his clothes? It looks like he's having a stroke right now. And, like, you're pulling his stuff off your head and blowing it up, and, you know, you try to close one pant leg, the other one would come up, blow up, you know, all the air would come out. And finally, though, you know, she figured it out. She helped me remain afloat while I was doing it, you know, because I'd have to go under the water to take certain things off, like my shoes. And, you know, and if I dropped one, I couldn't go all the way to the bottom. I didn't have the lung capacity to go all the way to the bottom. So she'd go get my shoe, hold me up afloat. And Juliet did an amazing job. It was incredible. And, you know, I look at that in my life, and that story is another powerful one, because again, she's that mentor. God is all over this story, right? And it taught me a lesson too. And it taught my family a lesson. It didn't just teach me a lesson. I remember standing at the Eagle Scout Award. It was like the last badge or one of the last badges I had to get. And I remember standing there and my scoutmaster telling me and telling everyone there that I overcame that and didn't take the easy road out. I didn't apply for a dispensation. I did it. I overcame that struggle of learning how to swim and being able to do so well. And, you know, it teaches us the lesson of this. It's the Beatitudes, straight out of the Beatitudes. Those who persevere, those who continue to seek God, there's a reward at the end. And heaven is that reward for us as Catholics and Christians. Heaven is that reward, but we have to continually seek Him. We have to continually work. We have to persevere through our trials. It's not easy. It's not easy. And I understand how you guys here tonight can just write all of these stories off as good old-fashioned secular try-hard. Like, you've seen it on SportsCenter, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, guy runs in the New York Marathon with an amputated leg, with one of those prosthetic legs, and you see that. You see that. The world celebrates that. But on ESPN and on CBS Evening News, you don't see or don't hear anything about God, right? The difference is that I believe God was present and helped me overcome all those struggles. But I can see how you on the surface just think, God's not present in that. Heck with that. You know, Bill just really worked hard. He overcame it and, okay. But I'm going to offer you in this next set of stories to maybe change that mindset a little bit. This next story takes place when I was a high school junior. And I have to go to the cardiologist for yearly checkups. Every year I go see my cardiologist, and most of my life has been pretty uneventful. I go up there, the cardiologist says, "You look great, go home, have a nice year, we'll see you again next year." This particular year, in 11th grade, his words were a little different. I went through some tests like I normally do, and he said, "Bill, there's a 90% chance that you're going to need to have open-heart surgery again this summer." And for us juniors, you know, we're looking forward to the summer, right, this year, because it's supposed to be like the best summer, right? You're not in college yet. You're not worried about packing and going away and saying all your goodbyes. But what? You've got, like, a promise toward the end of the year. You're getting ready. You're getting psyched up to have, like, the best summer of your life. And that's the way I was. I was like, this is going to be the best summer. I'm going to go out with my friends until, wait a minute, 90% chance I need surgery, 8-week recovery, entire summer blown, right? And my entire world was rocked. You know, I had just asked my girlfriend to go to prom with me. I was worried about colleges and graduation. Would I ever go to college? Would I be able to get a degree? Am I going to die from this? Am I going to have another stroke from this? I was in the hospital in shock. It happened so quickly. I was on the car ride home crying in tears with my mom on the phone. And I was getting just a little bit ahead of myself, however. Just a tiny little bit ahead of myself. You just don't go from, "Hi, you need open heart surgery," to going right to the table and they're operating on you. There's lots of other tests and things they have to do. So one of those tests back when I had it in high school was what they call a cardiac catheterization. It's where they take a 3-foot-long catheter, they put it in a vein in your leg here, and they insert it in the vein, and then they wiggle that needle all the way up, and it goes up into your heart, and it has cameras and balloons and pictures and all sorts of things on the end of that. Very interesting. Okay? Interesting if you don't have to go through it. But I knew that I had to do this. It was like right after the Spring Musical. Right after the Spring Musical, I had to do this. I had to go. So I go, it's the morning of this procedure, and I'm sitting in my dad's big chair, and I'm seated here in this big chair, and it's like 6 o'clock in the morning because my mom, being a registered nurse at Children's Hospital, has scheduled us for the best appointment, the one that starts at, you know, like 8 a.m. We're very happy about that. I mean, I know how happy you guys are to wake up now. Here on retreat, so you can imagine how happy I was to wake up and have to go undergo this procedure. And so I'm sitting there literally frozen and shocked in my dad's chair at like 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm sitting there and I'm staring off into space, just scared out of my mind that I had to go through this. Because I know it's coming at the end. It's, here are the numbers, it's time to have surgery. Well, I was seated there, my dad comes down with his car keys in his hand. And he looks at me, and he's just sitting there, and he says, "Billy, what's the matter?" I said to him, "Dad, I'm just so scared. I'm so scared." And the tears just started flowing down my face. So he ran back up the stairs, and you know, for that nanosecond, you're like, yes, I don't have to go today. But I did. And he came running right back down. In his hand, he had a handkerchief. And, you know, you're thinking, that's great, because I'm crying. I'm going to wipe all the tears off my face, and I'm going to, just go to the hospital now. But he said, stop. Don't wipe your tears off. Put this handkerchief on your chest. And I asked him why. And he said, this handkerchief was touched to the glove of Padre Pio. And Padre Pio was a saint that had the stigmata, okay? And he would wear gloves at the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass because his hands would bleed so much that he could not and would not want to contaminate the hosts. And these gloves were filled with blood, his blood. And so the handkerchief was touched to that glove. It became a sacramental, a third-class relic. And as it sat there on my chest in that spring of junior year, I was getting ready to go to the hospital, I just remember really trusting God for the first time. There was nothing I could do but trust God. Guys, I had been to Steubenville. I had been a Jesus freak for a long time. I was in all the youth groups. You know, I had done it. But I had never really trusted God with my life before. And my prayer was so simple. It was, Jesus, get me out of this chair. Give me the strength to get me out of this chair. And you know what? I stood up. I went into the hospital. I had the procedure. It was horrible. They had to drug me twice because I tried to wake up. It was a terrible procedure. But when I first woke up, my parents, like they do, they lean over the ICU gurney. And you sort of see them through your eyelids, literally. My dad goes, you know, hey, champ, hi, Billy, hi, sweetie. And I remember the first words out of my mouth, they weren't, how high, how are you? It was, do I need surgery? And my mom said, no, sweetie, you don't. No, sweetie, you don't. And so it's not some crazy miracle. I can guarantee you that. There's a perfectly logical reason why the surgery went as it did. Or the cath results were the way they were. The machines were off, the numbers were off on the machines, and I just didn't need the surgery. On the other tests, they were way off. Another way that I know that it's not some supernatural event is that I still have a patchwork heart. My heart is still sewn up. It hasn't been healed. I still have the same stroke. And June 10th of this year, just 5 months ago, come tomorrow, I had to have my third open heart surgery. I had to undergo this surgery this summer. Many of you already know this, and many of you prayed for me. I cannot thank you enough for the prayers that you have shared for me. I cannot thank you enough. Their efficacy, I cannot even explain to you. They worked. But I want to take you on the journey that I took this summer through heart surgery and how God's powerful love was there at every turn. I'll tell you that anticipation is the worst. Anticipation is absolutely the worst. Occasionally during the months leading up to the surgery, I'd wake up in the middle of the night after having my 20th dream that I was undergoing the heart surgery, or I had just woken up in recovery in the dream. It pervaded my prayer life. It was the number one thing that I was worried about for a year and a half as leading up to the surgery. I had found out almost 2 years ago now that I needed it. It preoccupied everything. Have you guys ever tried to feel something before it happens? It's impossible, right? Feeling a feeling before it happens is really, really hard. It's like, I'd like to feel how they cut my chest open and rip it apart, stop my heart, sew it back up. I'd like to feel all that. I'm trying. I'm willing myself to feel this. You can't. It's impossible. No matter how many times you do it, no matter how many times you try, it just doesn't work. All you can do is wonder what it's going to be like as you wander into the unknown. Asking a million times what this is going to be like and receiving absolutely no solid answer. My parents, my mom's a registered nurse. She knows a lot about hearts, obviously having me. She had to do a lot of research. And has really walked with me step by step throughout this entire journey. But she still, even as she described what they were going to do and where they were going to put lines and how they were going to do it all, couldn't ease me. Couldn't ease my mind. My doctors, as they explained where they were going to cut and what valve they were going to put in and how they were going to do it, still couldn't be on the side of the bed that I was going to be on. And my friends, too, they couldn't offer any real consolation. Coworkers, friends, you know, I'll pray for you. That was the best thing that somebody could tell me. But they couldn't give me any advice. I had to walk it alone. I had to go through it in my head in a way that I didn't have somebody to be able to turn to for consolation. Sure, I leaned on my family, and I loved my family, and I needed my family more than ever. I needed my friends more than ever. I needed my doctors more than ever. And even God seemed to provide no answer other than, I've got this. Remember back to high school? It's not a big deal. I've got this. I got the whole world in my hands. That includes you, so you don't have to worry about that. I'm like, thanks, God. I'm still worrying, you know. But I'll skip the rest of the anticipation, and I'll go to the day packing to go to the surgery. I had the surgery at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. It's a 6.5-hour drive from my parents' house. And the day of packing was one that was really, really hard for me. I remember packing up my clothes and everything that I would need, and my parents doing the same thing. Sitting there wondering if this was really the last time that I was going to leave home. So I needed a distraction. You know, God's good for distractions. He helps you get through it. You know, you trust him with stuff, and he helps you get through it. You guys know that I'm nuts. You know, I'm here dressing up in a Flintstone costume in the morning, waking you up. So I downloaded a song from my iTunes. And it's a song that's a little bit insane, ridiculous, a kid's song. You've all seen Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I mean, people have seen that movie. Santa Claus is Coming to Town? Yes? All right. Remember the song in the movie called Put One Foot in Front of the Other? I downloaded that song to my iPod Shuffle, and I turned it on repeat for 6 hours as I packed. I listened to that song in my ears for 6 hours, and I just kept saying that same prayer with that Padre Pio handkerchief. Just let me take the next step. Just let me get out of this chair, because that's what I need. I needed that message. Just put one foot in front of the other, right? And soon you'll be walking out the door. You know what? I got there. Eventually, I got in the car. And you know what? I needed that song again when I got to the hotel room where I was staying overnight before the surgery, right? They make you do all these things before surgery. You have to squirt this stuff up in your nose so you don't breathe like the bacteria or staph infection on your incision. So they put this gel up in your nose. It's antibiotic so you don't breathe it. So I'm putting Vaseline, it's like Vaseline consistency, up my nose. And like I'm rubbing it in, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And then they made you shower with pink soap. It was pink liquid soap. And I am a large supporter of people who suffer from breast cancer, but showering with pink soap is a little bit ridiculous. So I'm like, Jesus, do I really need to shower with pink soap? He's like, yes. He's like, can you make it any other color? No. So I'm showering with pink soap the night before the surgery, and then I had to shower again in the morning with the pink soap. And this soap is really high concentrate, so it kills all the germs on your body. And I'm showering with the pink soap, two showers with the pink soap, and I had to share a hotel room with my dad and mom next, you know, so they're in one bed on one side of the room, I'm on the other bed. And, you know, it's already like 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, and my dad gets tired and he starts snoring, so that means that I get zero sleep the whole night because it's, Dad, you're snoring. Dad, you're snoring. Please stop snoring. I can't. It's, yeah, I'm like, oh, God. Hey, Dad, so you know I have heart surgery tomorrow. I don't care. Like, Dad, can you fix that? Get something. Get surgery or something for that. So maybe the doc can fix that too. Ask him. Anyway, so it comes the morning, like, you know, now it's time. I've been thinking about it for a couple of years, and I've been praying about it for a couple of years. And people all over the place are praying, all over the world are praying for me. St. Francis, you guys had a Eucharistic adoration during my surgery time. You started at like 5 o'clock in the morning when I was to get up, and you didn't end until pretty much the surgery was over, or at least they had figured out where everything was wrong, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. I get up, and my call time at the hospital again is 5:45 in the morning. You know, but this time I really wanted that. You want to be the first case. You want the surgeon to be awake and fresh and ready to go. So I really wanted that. I was ready for it. I got dressed and walked over across the street to St. Mary's Hospital, and I walked in. And they began to ask me some questions. I turned over all the paperwork that I needed, and then they dressed me in a hospital gown. Continued to ask me a few more questions. And then, of course, you know, me being, you know, the youth minister, me being, you know, with Jesus, I had already gotten all the sacraments, been to confession, got the anointing of the sick from the priest earlier in the week, but I wanted to see another priest right before the surgery, just to pray and ask for the doctor's hands to be, guided and all that. So naturally, asking for the Catholic priest, I get the Protestant minister, and, now we're praying with the Protestant minister, and I did everything in my body not to try and convert him. I'm sitting there like, don't you know you need to be Catholic? But no, you know, I couldn't say that. He was really praying for me. He did a great job, and he put me at ease. And they literally come in, and they don't tell you that they're wheeling you to the operating room. They don't like say that. They just take you, and you know, it's like hi, now we're going to come and take you in. So they start wheeling the bed, and my mom and dad walk out, and, you know, I shake their hand, and my dad pats me on the shoulder. My mom, you know, kisses me goodnight or whatever, kisses me goodnight or goodbye or whatever. And they wheel you into the operating room, and then they pick you up, and they put you on the operating table. And you're still remembering all this. You're still awake for all this. They start to put in all the IV lines. They put in, like, IV lines here and here and in your legs. They put them in all over the place, and they do so. So that they can inject drugs and get you situated for surgery and during surgery and all that. So they're putting in all these IV lines. They're putting in all this stuff. And the last thing they tell you to do before the surgery or before the surgery begins or before they put you to sleep for good is the nurse will say, the anesthesiologist will say, I'm going to inject the drugs that are going to make you fall asleep now. The next thing you always remember is waking up in the ICU. So I won't remember anything until I'm out of surgery. And they ask you, in every hospital I've ever been, any time I've been under general anesthesia, they always ask you to count backward from 10. And I did not do that. I could not do that. Anybody that knows me really well knows that I absolutely hate math. It was too important to allow numbers to be my last words if that was going to be the case. Open heart surgery, guys, means that they actually stop the heart from beating and restart it. So if it didn't restart, my last number wasn't going to be, or my last word was not going to be the number 7. It just wasn't. And have you ever thought about what your last words on this earth are going to be? I probably think you're too young to begin to think about that. I like to think I'm too young to think about that. But I have thought about it. I have thought about it. And I wasn't about to let a simple countdown of numbers be my last words. So I felt the drugs start to flow into my vein, and I began saying, "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you." And the surgery began. At the same time that the surgery was going on, St. Francis was having a Eucharistic adoration. They don't perform the surgery right away. As I said, they have to do a lot of other tests to make sure they get the numbers right and where they're going to cut. They just don't go in and go, "I'm going to cut here and here and here." So they do what they call a transesophageal echocardiogram. Now, that's some good medical jargon for you. Basically, what it is they take a tube and they shove it down your neck. On the end of the tube, it has an ultrasound, much like the baby ultrasounds, right? It has an ultrasound that gets shoved down your neck. And you're not awake for it, so you don't remember it. But thank God. But what they do is they're taking pictures of your heart from your esophagus. And I will tell you, miracles happen through ordinary means, all right? No joke. No joke. The exact timestamp that Father Jim lifted the monstrance in benediction on the day of my surgery was the time that they found the additional issue in my right ventricle, in my right atrium. The exact same time that Father Jim gave benediction to the people praying for me at St. Francis was the exact same time that the doctors found a 5-millimeter hole that is the size of the tip of a pin. A 5-millimeter hole in my right atrium, or my left atrium, in between the atriums. It had gone undetected for 28 years. And at that exact moment, I know without a doubt that is a result of the prayers that were offered. I know it. There's nothing you can do to convince me otherwise. And the rest of the repair went off without a hitch. They completed the surgery, they did the surgery. And the next thing that happened was I woke up in the ICU. I'm going to tell you this, that I don't know how and I don't know why, and it's something that will probably remain with me for the rest of my life. But when you're on general anesthesia and your heart's been stopped, it takes a while for you to come out of that. It takes a process to come out of that. They have to loosen the drugs little by little, and you begin to wake up. But the first time I woke up, something awakened in me before my body woke up. I guess I could think it was my soul, but I don't know. But my consciousness awoke before my body did. And in that, it was a split second, like it was faster than a snap of the fingers. But in that split second, there was just divine knowledge, transmission of divine knowledge, that everything was done right, it was done correctly, and everything was going to, I was going to have the strength to get through the recovery. It was going to happen, without a doubt. And then, I woke up, and I sat up, and there was a breathing tube down my neck, and I was throwing up through the breathing tube. It was unimaginable pain down the foot-long scar that's down my chest. Unimaginable pain down there. But on a scale of 1 to 10, it was about a 7. And I was sitting there, couldn't speak because the breathing tube was down there. They were suctioning out my mouth. and my dad and mom are over the ICU gurney because they have to be in the ICU. That's just how my mother will fight to be in the ICU every time. And they're standing over the gurney, and my dad goes, "How are you, champ?" I passed right back out again. I woke back up again and again, and I threw up three times. One time I threw up on my incision, and they have to clean, they take all the tape off, clean your incision, put the tape back on. It was rough. It was hard. It was not easy. You know, sort of the way, you know, Eminem puts it, it's, you know, snap back to reality. You know, oh, there goes gravity, right? And it's sort of like that. I mean, that's the best way that I can sort of, describe it. You know? But I wish I could promise each and every one of you, I wish I could promise you that just because God enters your life and you have a relationship with God and you've done great things and you've experienced Him this weekend or you've experienced Him in your life before, that the world is going to just be all perfect. It's not the case. There's still going to be struggle. There's still going to be it's stuff to overcome. You're gonna have issues in your lives, big ones. And just because you have faith doesn't eliminate them, right? Some of my best friends have had to walk through, and some of your parents and some of your best friends have had to walk through cancer. Some of you have had to suffer unimaginable things. Some of your parents are struggling with addictions. Some of you are struggling with addictions. Some things are going on in life that just seem, you know, insurmountable. But God, Jesus Christ, and God will help you through each and every one of them. And I guarantee it, it's easier with Him than without Him. If I didn't have Him with this surgery, I don't know where I would be. I have no clue where I would be without Him. He gives us so much hope. Christ gives us so much hope. He says in John 17, verse 33, and this is my message to you as well. Why do I tell my story? Why does Christ do what He does and tell His story? I have told you these things so that in Me you might have peace. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart. I have overcome the world. So tonight, we have an incredible opportunity. An opportunity to experience the power of God in the sacraments. And there's some really good news. You don't need to have open heart surgery tonight to experience God's power. God demonstrates His power through the sacraments every time. At every Mass, the Eucharist is consecrated. In the confessional, Jesus Christ is forgiving your sins. He is present in each and every single one of His sacraments. These sacraments are a visible sign of an invisible reality. That's what the church teaches. Sacraments are a visible sign of an invisible reality. Notice the word reality. They are real. Just because you can't see them doesn't make them not real. They are real things. The signs are what? The words. The words of absolution, the priest says, or the bread we consume in the Eucharist, or the oil that is used at confirmation. These are signs of things actually happening to your soul. Your soul is purified and forgiven in the sacrament of reconciliation. It is sealed with the power of the Holy Spirit in confirmation, In the Eucharist, ordinary bread that you make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with is turned into the body, blood, and soul and divinity of Jesus Christ. It is real. It is not a mistake. It is not a game that we play. This is what Catholicism is all about. Make no mistake. And tonight, we have that opportunity to ascend that Mount Sinai, to go up Mount Sinai and experience the trembling and the thunder and the lightning and really grip onto God's power. And you know what? It's now time to flip the switch in your heart. And believe me, they can do it. They do it with paddles after heart surgery. They reshock your heart and it starts. It's time to put the paddles to the heart right now. If your spiritual heart is dead, it's time to put the paddles there and let Christ in. Go all out tonight. Leave it all on the table tonight. Do not regret this tonight. If there is a shred, if there is a tiny little shred in your head saying, go to confession, pray your heart out, do it. And I promise you this, God will not disappoint.